Hello, Portland Trailblazer fans, and welcome to this edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. You can catch us on Stitcher. You can catch us on iTunes. You can catch us almost anywhere that you find better podcasting, and we hope that you are with us today and feeling good. It is the Christmas season. We want everybody to feel happy, even though the win-loss fairy is being kind of a Grinch to the Trailblazers right now. I am with, as always, my co-host Dan Morang. Dan, not the greatest time to be a Trailblazer fan right now.
That win-loss fairy is a complete jerk.
That's kind of
how I feel about it. And, you know, I don't want to go, I told you so, Dave, but remember that rough stretch that I was talking about that was coming up? It hit back really hard.
Yeah, well, see, the problem was they were almost, you remember a couple weeks ago, I predicted the Blazers would win 6 of 8 in December. In December, when you guys, you and Chad were like going, Chad Dewing, of course, of Rip City Radio, who was our guest, you were going, nah, it's going to be February, it's going to be March, it's going to be 2042 before they win 6 of 8. And I was going, fine, December, and they almost did it. They were right on the cusp, and they reached for it, and they tumbled over a cliff, and now they're more likely to lose 6 of 8 than get anywhere near winning 6 of 8.
They actually have lost 6 of their last 8.
No, don't. I'm blurring it out. Stop it. I mean, that loss to the Warriors counts as like 4 losses right on its own. I mean, that was like 4 double-digit losses in one game. I mean, I know they're the Warriors, but
that's like math-wise, wow. Though, that you're actually right. It was a 40-point loss. It's 4 double-digit.
It was more than 40. It was like 45.
Well, yeah, 45. So they had some extra change in there for each quarter.
We took a double-digit loss in every quarter. Oh, that's painful. Yeah. But hey, you know, okay. So look, let's start out with our first topic, which is one I addressed yesterday in a mailbag. I want to get your feelings on it. A lot of people are starting to sour. No, I shouldn't say that. Let's put it this way. The rumblings are starting that this may be a coaching issue. I have kind of made my feelings known. I will again, I'm sure, in about 10 seconds. But what do you think about that explanation? Has Terry Stotts all of a sudden forgotten how to coach?
Yeah, no, that was a really weird deal. You know, I wrote the postgame analysis for the Warriors game. And, you know, I expected there to be some negative feedback and some criticism of the team and the way they're playing. But I figured it would have been directed at the team that just allowed a 45-point loss, not at the coaching staff. Like, that literally hit me out of left field. I looked at that and I was like, whoa, what? You're talking about Coach Stotts, the coach that, when he had, you know, able defensive players, had a pretty solid defense. And in Dallas, when he was there, was he the defensive coach? No. But he's working with Coach Carlisle out there and Dwayne Casey, and they put a pretty effective defense out there when they had effective defensive players. And if you look at Coach Stotts' track record, I mean, he comes into Portland, improves the defense when, you know, as the team grew and these guys got older and they learned along the way, but they had something to build on to begin with. Then you take away the team's best player, and people may not realize this, but LaMarcus Aldridge is one of the most underrated defenders in the league. In his rim protection numbers and his defensive numbers in the pick and roll, on the post up in isolation, are some of the best for a power forward in the past 10 years. So yeah, when you lose a piece like that, not to mention your two best perimeter defenders and your best perimeter your interior defender and Robin Lopez, yeah, you're going to expect some aggression. So I'm not exactly certain why everybody all of a sudden thought that, you know, you lose all those pieces and suddenly it's on the coaching staff.
Yeah, well, what people are going to ask is, why has the defense plummeted this year when it was, by some metrics, it was decent last year? I mean, I thought those metrics were a little overrated. Frankly, I never thought Portland was a great defensive team, but you can make an argument that they were not. Well, in fact, you're sure they were not this horrible. What's happened in the first couple months that has just sent them down the drain?
If you look at Portland's numbers from last year, I mean, they finished, what, 20th? You're still bottom third in the league.
Yeah.
So
20th looks better than 30th defensive rating, which they were last I checked, but
yeah,
still.
But you're not talking about a team that was incredible defensively. Yeah, they had a stretch where they played really well, but I think part of that had to do with you had guys that were working incredibly hard, and that's something that's been questioned not only by us, but the players. I mean, the effort's not being given. You don't all of a sudden become basketball dumb. These guys aren't low IQ basketball players. They know what to do. They're just not doing it. Transition defense. I mean, you look at the Warriors. Ian Clark came down on secondary fast break. I saw two guys run to the guy at the rim who didn't have the ball, and nobody recovered to get out to Ian Clark, who at that time I believe was 4-for-4 shooting. So, yeah. I mean, that's just basic stuff. I mean, you know where you need to get. The first quarter, we had Noah Vonleh picking up Steph Curry and Kevin Durant more than he was picking up Pachulia and Draymond Green. You don't have to be a basketball savant to figure out that that's not going to work out for you in the short or the long term. So, I mean, you're talking about things that it's an effort thing to me, really, that it's just not really happening on the floor.
Well, I think effort and communication in some ways. That's like, yes, you know this as a basketball player. At the same time, a lot of defense happens on instinct. I mean, offense does too, in a sense, when you're making your move or going up for your shot. But offense requires, I think, a bit more vision, a bit more cooperation in terms of you might pass the ball, you might use a pick or whatever. Defense causes you to react instead of being proactive in a lot of ways. I mean, you're watching another player. And the thing is, you've got to react so quickly that you don't have time to think. It's instinct. If you make the wrong move, you are done at an NBA level. They're just going to burn you. They burn guys who are leaning slightly on the wrong foot, let alone if you go onto the wrong spot on the floor. And I think there's just a lot of mental lapses there that they're not communicating, that they're not quite sure. And most that they're kind of halfway thinking something should happen instead of instinctively reacting and making it happen. The other thing we got to say, though, I mean, okay, Al-Farouq Aminu, he is not playing. Who is their best defender? By far the guy that they depend on to shut down the opponent's best wing player, no matter who that is. And now, power forwards too, it's him, and he's not suited up. And that's a huge loss defensively.
Yeah. On top of that, on top of Aminu being out, and Harkless, I mean, you look at his metrics, he's come in and filled Aminu's role as the defensive stopper pretty admirably. If you look at his stats, even for the Blazers, even considering how bad the Blazers have been defensively, Harkless's individual numbers actually shine pretty good, and it's kind of makes me think how good they would look on a team that actually had some kind of defensive focus, like how good of a defender he could be in a system where everybody's communicating on a string. So there's a little bit of hope there, and when Aminu returns, you know, that'll bring a lot. But Damian Lillard said something in the post game the other night after the Warriors game that was really interesting to me, in that he said he felt like guys probably or maybe weren't preparing correctly. And he referenced game tape and scouting reports, and then he kind of backed off that a little bit. And if you're talking about coaching, I think you could maybe make some criticism there, and just to kind of play devil's advocate here. If guys aren't preparing accordingly, or they don't feel like, or Damian Lillard saying guys aren't preparing accordingly or aren't being prepared correctly, I guess you could argue that, but I don't think that's the point that Lillard was making. I think that he's saying these guys need to put it upon themselves to prepare the right way. And I think, again, that goes back to an effort thing.
I think you would argue that they were pretty well prepared when they doubled the win total expectations from last season and made it to the second round of the playoffs. Again, we've talked about that, a somewhat questionable distinction, but still, they were there and they were prepared enough to do that. I don't think Stotts is mailing in the preparation thing. There's only so much that people can absorb, and if you're not interested in absorbing it, you're kind of up the creek. And it might be a little interesting in terms of you have shifted some things around, and apparently that shift would be enough to cause that disruption. I mean, Harkless obviously in the starting lineup, but you can't credit him for not doing it. Aminu has shifted positions. Maybe we're talking bench. I don't know who Lillard is referencing, but it seems to me that this is a team-wide systematic thing. And I will say this too. You accept this, not accept it, you expect this out of a young team, okay? That the things they can control, they're very good at, but the things they can't control, they have a hard time compensating for. I think when you're a veteran, you learn how to compensate for stuff beyond your normal sphere of influence. And defense is beyond Portland's normal sphere of influence. By definition, you don't control it. The other guy does. And the Blazers just don't deal with the unknown very well in any part of their game. And I think it's they're just being exposed right now.
I think there's a way that you can look at this that makes sense in a way, in that both Lillard and McCollum are both guys that can impose their will offensively at pretty much any point. The Blazers don't have a single person on their team that can impose their will defensively.
Aminu.
He's probably the closest thing they have. And even then, he is not going to shut somebody down. I mean, you look at a Kawhi Leonard or a LeBron James. Yes, I know the difference between a superstar two-way player and Maurice Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu. But that's what we're talking about, in that these guys can single-handedly impose their will defensively and take somebody out of a game. Look at what Chris Paul regularly does to Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
I mean, if Portland has a guy like a Rudy Gobert who says, "You're not getting inside here tonight, and every shot that you get in this paint is going to be contested and difficult the entire evening," it alters an opponent's game plan. I mean, you talk about scouting reports, and that's a real thing. So I think that's something that Portland really has to take a look at.
Yeah, and I think the last thing that we should say is that, look, the Blazers are not the new kids on the block anymore. They're not surprising anybody. I think we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Teams know how to beat Portland now. They it showed up in neon bright colors last spring when everybody was watching. And now I think you don't even have to game plan that much. You know the Blazers are going to break defensively if you put enough pressure on them. You know exactly where their scoring is coming from and how to handle them. It's one of those things where the Blazers didn't get any new wrinkles, and their old wrinkles just weren't wrinkly enough. There weren't enough of them. And you're going to have problems. You will have no problems riding Lillard or McCollum to 50 plus points per game between the pair, but riding them to wins is another story. Now, if we want the difference maker, something that's come up this morning, and there's been rumbling since the weekend when this guy got in controversy yet again, if DeMarcus Cousins finally annoys Sacramento enough to move him, there is some debate whether his attitude issues would be enough to disqualify him from playing for the Blazers or any other NBA team. If you were Neil Olshey, would you overlook that and make a move for Cousins, assuming one could be found that is affordable?
Up until I hesitate here, because the incident in the nightclub is that one bothers me. The locker room stuff, it's whatever. You know, everybody I've ever talked to that's been around that organization, been around Cousins, they all said the same thing, is that, yeah, he can be a bit of a head case on the floor during game days. And yes, he can be demonstrative and prickly with the media, but he's a good dude and he just wants to win and he's tired of the dysfunction in Sacramento. That was always the narrative about Cousins. Now with this incident in the nightclub, that one makes me take a little bit of a pause. So I have to wait and see what kind of comes out of that. If all that comes out and he's cleared in that incident, then I'm still on board. But if something more comes out of that incident, then no, I'm not wanting that on the team. And people can say, but he's so great and he's so talented. Yeah, they'd be right. But and I am not. I spent almost the entirety of the Jailblazer era in Afghanistan. So I just don't even want to deal with what's going on or what could go on if that whole deal is true. Because if that's happened and that comes to fruition, that it, you know, it's played out like it's being portrayed, then it's probably not the first time. And it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you can get that kind of thing anywhere near Portland, just because it is so fishbowl. There's just too close. It's like going into a really small apartment with a lot of people in NBA terms. Your behavior's got to be pretty good, or it shows up pretty quick and it disrupts things. But that said, let's assume for the sake of a conversation that we lay that aside. People don't realize that Cousins is actually a pretty good defender.
He's a great defender. I mean, he can legitimately cover on the perimeter. There's no doubt about it. I mean, this is a big man, but he moves his feet. At his size, he probably moves his feet better than anyone I've ever seen in the past 15 to 20 years. You don't get that big and move that quick, flip your hips and have good footwork like that. I mean, it's a rare thing to see. You can see guys like Durant and Giannis who are much lighter. You don't see guys with that kind of bulk move like a gazelle. I mean, you look at him in the fast break and it's like, that guy's almost 7 foot tall and 300 pounds. How does he move like that? So if you're talking about defensively, yeah, he can cover out on the perimeter. He can play inside. He can play, you know, in between everywhere. He's a shot blocker. He's a post defender. He can play in the pick and roll. So, yeah, no, it would mark all the boxes for Portland.
I would argue probably not the best shot blocker. That's the one area of his game where I think he's not that he's bad, but I think that he's just he's not that guy.
Who's the last shot blocker Portland had?
Oh, Lord Almighty, Theo Ratliff.
I mean, in between him and now,
Prisbilla,
it's Prisbilla Prince. Did well. That wouldn't be really anything new for Portland, and really,
He's better or as good as the people Portland has had.
Yeah. Right?
So, but I mean, that's picking. I mean, so look, he's an average. He's an okay shot blocker. That's what I mean. Not that he's a bad one, but he's a superstar in nearly every other way. He's not a superstar shot blocker.
No,
but he's gonna eat up enough space. And his defensive rebounding is great. I mean, his presence on the floor, even on the defensive end, makes you take notice. As you say, his ability to cover space as well as eat it. And that's something that the Blazers haven't had. This is the problem with the Blazers. They've got one thing or the other. They had a person who could eat space in Robin Lopez but couldn't cover it. Now they've got a person who can cover space in Mason Plumlee but can't eat it. This guy can cover and eat all day long. So, I mean, and that's just the defensive end.
We're not getting into the fact that he's a 25-15 guy either.
25? He's at 28 this season. He was at 27 last season. I mean, everything you say about C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard scoring, he's better.
He's right there in the upper echelon of scorers in the league.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, at the center position, which find that anywhere.
Oh, and by the way, he shoots threes.
Yeah, I mean, his three-point shooting...
He's a 40% three-point shooter right now.
Well, 36.
Okay, so he's fallen off slightly.
He's fallen off. It's still 36 is respectable in Portland's front court. I mean, and get this. He's only a 45% shooter from the field, but he still scores 28 points a game. Now, of course, you're thinking, well, he takes a ton of shots. Well, of course he does, but... Show me a center that you can load up with 20 decent field goal attempts. You have a lot of centers who can shoot 53%, but they only take 6 shots a game.
Within 5 feet. This guy has got legitimate range up to 26 feet.
Yeah, you can ride this guy anytime from any spot on the floor from the center position. That is kind of a big deal. I mean, in his shooting percentage, okay, he's 41% between 3 and 10 feet, which is not great, but it's better than a lot of the Blazers. He's 39% from between 16 feet and the three-point arc. Now, granted, he doesn't take a ton of those proportionally, but that's actually really good.
Well, analytically, if you're shooting 40% from anywhere outside of the paint, you are at the league average for 20-point-per-game scores.
Right.
Historically. So you're talking about a center who historically is shooting outside of the paint as good as any other 20-point-per-game scorer, which is more often than not wing players.
And listen to this. Dude can get his own shot as a center. He can create his own shot and not just from the post. You can name about maybe 3 people who can do that from that position in the entire NBA who are any good.
Talking Cat, AD, and Porzingis. I mean, that's the list stops there. I mean, and then Cousins.
Right.
So yeah, you're talking the legitimate cream of the crop.
Yeah, I mean, and those names are jaw dropping. I mean, that's those are names where basically if you redrafted, you would draft them number one without any consideration. And some of them were flat out drafted number one, period, even in their initial drafts. Okay, so. Look, this guy was straight up phenomenal. I mean, there's no denying his talent. It is generational. It is proven. He's only 26 years old. Oh my gosh. I mean, come on. You know, he's not even, it's like a lot of these guys. Okay, well,
he's,
you know,
hitting his prime now.
He's Dwight Howard. He's 32 years old. What do you know? This guy is, I mean, you cannot get any more in the Blazers' wheelhouse age-wise. I just do not see how, granted, I don't see that there's any opportunity for this to really happen. But if there was an opportunity for this to happen, I do not see how you can pass him up.
You can't. Again, we're decoupling this from the off-the-court incident that's hanging out.
That one, yeah, got it.
And if you're talking from a pure basketball standpoint, not just talent, I don't care about how he racks up tees on the court. I honestly, I've been saying this for a while now. I've said it privately within the Blazers staff, and I've said it publicly a couple times in a couple articles. The Blazers don't have enough nasty. They don't have a jerk on the roster. They don't have a guy that needs them. Here's the thing in the NBA. You need somebody who's going to mouth off. You need somebody who's going to look at somebody on their own team, tell them to pull their head out, and get it done. I don't care if somebody does that, and the Blazers need that. There is nobody on this team who has a nasty streak in him. DeMarcus Cousins has a nasty streak in him. And to me, I'd give up anything not named Lillard for Cousins. And really, if you're talking about constructing a roster, Lillard and Cousins makes a lot more sense than really anything else.
That, of course, brings us to the question. So I assume you've answered this. If CJ were part of the package, you would do that to create Lillard and Cousins as a duo.
Absolutely. I mean, my dream threesome for the Blazers consists of Lillard, Paul George, Cousins. Those, I know that the possibilities of it are.
What? No, I'm saying if Indiana keeps sucking, I was doing like a mental Rolodex.
Oh, yeah. I sit there and watch them all the time. Like, come on, keep sucking. Come on, yeah, keep sucking.
If you trade CJ away, you have a hard time getting George, but I mean, your guy can dream. Anyway. Yeah,
but I mean, if you talk about what the Blazers lack, they lack an elite perimeter defender, two-way player. And much as I like Aminu, and I've been a big fan of Aminu for a while now, he's improved his three-point shooting, but he's not Paul George, you know, putting the ball on the floor. So you'd have a two-way player that you would cover up for any loss of offense. Oh, and by the way, you've got a guy named DeMarcus Cousins who can get his own shot, and he's a two-way player. The only real quote-unquote one-way player you would have on the team is Damian Lillard. And we've seen how Damian Lillard can thrive when he's got other guys around him. Look at that team with Wes Matthews, Nick Batum, Aldridge, and Lopez. Yes, Lillard struggled defensively, but it wasn't a nightly comedy of errors. I mean, right. You look at where he's sitting right now, both him and McCollum, where they're sitting right now in the pick and roll defensively, and it's a train wreck. So, yeah, I love CJ, and people have, you know, have got the pitchforks and torches out for me plenty in the past. I never thought that Lillard and McCollum would work, and it's solely based on defense. That's been my shtick since McCollum became a starter. I love CJ. I'm on record as saying if CJ ran his own team, I easily see him being a 25-5-5 guy. I mean, he could be a star player on his own team. So if you're asking me if giving up McCollum to get Cousins here without having to mortgage the entirety of the future of the team, I mean, if you're talking about CJ plus Aminu plus Harkless plus two first-round picks, then no, we're pumping the brakes on that. But if we're talking CJ plus a player plus one of the first-round picks to make this happen, yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah, and tell you the truth, the technical foul thing doesn't bother me either, just because, I mean, you just got to look at it from a points.
It's Sacramento standpoint. Too. Come on.
Okay. Well, yeah. A, there's that. Okay. But how many? I mean, DeMarcus like led the lead in technicals last year, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't remember how many he got.
He was close to Sheed pace, and then he slowed down.
Yeah. Was he? I don't know. What was he? 30, 40?
I think he was like 31, 32. Because I think Sheed's like 36 or 38 for the record. So,
dude got 38 technical fouls. If the other team made all of them, he gave up 38 points in technical fouls.
Yeah.
he scored 1,748 points. I will take the 1,710-point margin and let him get all the tees he wants as long as he doesn't get suspended. Now, do I think, okay, do I think DeMarcus can guide you to the finals as the centerpiece, the sole leader, the superstar around which you center and depend? I don't, okay? I don't think he's that kind of...
No, you and I are eye to eye on that one. He's a fantastic 1A, though.
Right. That's why Damian Lillard exists. That's why this locker room exists. That's why people look and say, look, we don't care about your past. We don't care what you say to the media. Go after them all you want. You know, keep your hands off them. But if you don't want to interview, don't interview. Fine. Whatever. But we are here to win and we are here to do business. Do business with us, please. And I can't say that he will, but I bet he would. Listen to that pitch. I bet you would see at least enough marginal improvement to make the experiment worth trying. Now, obviously, also, we'd have to have a guarantee that he would stay, that, you know, beyond his current contract. Otherwise, you'd be trading away CJ to rent him. That's not anybody's idea of fun because they're not going to win a title in year one. But
and
anyway,
nobody in their right mind is going to make that deal without getting a guarantee from his agent, which technically isn't legal, but it's going to happen.
Okay, give me the other scenario, the one we talked about in the roundtable this morning, the one that has the site all afire and curses and pitchforks flying everywhere, but we'll address it anyway. Would you trade Damian Lillard for DeMarcus Cousins and then go with CJ and Cousins as your twin stars?
It makes sense on paper. And I know a lot of people could make a really good argument. Heck, I just said that I think CJ could run his own team. However, when I look at Lillard... And yeah, some of it's marketing and some of it's the way that he presents himself, but Lillard is an unabashed leader. He has the alpha gene, so to speak. There's unquantifiable things that he can do. And what's bothering me really right now is that we've seen those things from him in the past and we're not seeing it from him right now, which kind of makes me a little leery of this point. But I think he is the guy who could lead a championship team. I think he has that innate ability to will people to win. And I think part of that is somewhere, or some of that is waning right now. But if you're asking me to trade Lillard for Cousins, I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
I don't think the Blazers could. So I think it's a moot point because exactly that's the PR thing. I mean, Lillard, face of the franchise, sells shoes everywhere, sells jerseys everywhere. DeMarcus Cousins, enormous talent, but you have to hide him. You can't demonstrate him. Yes, you could put CJ in that spot, but CJ's, I think, a little more cerebral, a little kinder in some sense instead of showy. Not that Lillard isn't kind. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, that CJ's read is there's a really nice, really smart, really good basketball player. Damian Lillard's read is there goes a superstar, and that's hard to duplicate in PR terms. So I don't think they do it.
Yeah, if you're talking marketing wise, and here's the ironic thing, is that Lillard lets his play for the most part. He doesn't bark all that much. Yeah, he'll point to the wrist every now and then and thump his chest. But if you watch him on the court, and if you've ever been close enough to hear what's going on the court, Lillard's not much of a talker on the floor as far as getting at people.
The ironic, off the floor he is, though.
Yes, but on the floor, the biggest trash talker on the team is McCollum.
Yeah, that's funny.
Which is ironic if you really look at it.
They invert.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a weird dynamic on the floor. And I think that's part of why I look at CJ and I think he could eventually lead a team. But Lillard's been doing it really since 6 months into his rookie year.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Olshay anointed him when he got here. But it was still LaMarcus's team, particularly for the first 6 months of that season. And then it became evident that it was becoming Lillard's team very quickly.
You know what? CJ's got junk he's not showing, though. I mean, CJ's got, even off the floor.
Really,
if you let CJ, now, this guy's going to be in media and broadcasting for the rest of his natural born life. So he has got that mojo that he reads analysts / studio analysts more than, you know, Magic Johnson like superstar like Lillard does. But if you anointed him as the public face of this team, you would not be disappointed. So even though the Blazers wouldn't do it, I would say if Sacramento called and said, Damian Lillard for Cousins, I would think I'm at least going to say, hold on, hang up that phone and have a serious discussion about it.
Yeah, if you're
it.
Talking just straight up.
Yeah, I'm not saying I would pull the trigger, but I'm saying...
No, but
yeah.
you're not talking about CJ plus picks plus other players. No, you're talking just Dame for Cousins, straight deal.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a GM, you don't do it if you're Neil Olshey. But I think
no
you're
way
right.
Neil Olshey does it.
Well, no, I mean, if you take away the... But here's the hard part. You can't decouple that PR because it's worth something.
Yeah.
But from a pure basketball standpoint, it makes sense, but yep. It's the peripheral stuff. And yes, that some people will argue that it doesn't matter. Yes, it does. It does matter. It matters hugely, particularly in how you market your team and how you make money as a franchise. And that's something that is always factored into these type of deals, which is why you don't see superstars moved all that often. That's why the Kings have been hesitant to move him, because he's even with all that's going on there, he's still the face of that franchise.
Yeah. Because he's, without him, they probably win two games. Okay, so let's go off of Cousins for a second. Chris Nordby on Twitter, Nordby, if you want to give him a follow, seems like a great guy, certainly a handsome fellow, sent this tweet our way. So he created a poll on Twitter, what would you do as GM, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the two trades. Trade for Nerlens Noel, giving up either Allen Crabbe or Evan Turner. Keep dreaming. It's going to be Allen Crabbe. I think Evan Turner maybe biases this because people go, Turner for Noel, yes, rectify the mistake.
Yeah,
even though Turner's
that, though.
Playing well.
He would roll over in his grave before that happened.
Yeah, exactly. So forget Turner. Go Crabbe. So giving up Allen Crabbe and probably a pick for Nerlens Noel or CJ McCollum and something really minor maybe to get Hassan Whiteside. The Crabbe and a pick for Noel is leading 2-1 over CJ to get Whiteside. Would that be your take as well?
I'm honestly surprised it's not 3-1. CJ for Whiteside, no. I don't think they're anywhere near the same caliber of player. I like Whiteside. I really do. There's certain things about him that I definitely don't like, but the Heat don't have enough for me in my mind to send enough over for CJ. The Crabbe for Noel thing is something I've been kind of barking about for what seems like a year now. It just makes too much sense. It makes way too much sense. And with the way Philly's handling the situation, it looks like this deal needs to get done sooner rather than later. I mean, they've basically suspended him now because he's complaining about the minutes he's getting. And while Crabbe's been the good soldier here in Portland, he did make it known that he wants more minutes when he signed his deal. So, I mean, Crabbe goes to Philly and becomes a starter. Noel comes to Portland and becomes a starter?
Yeah.
That's the interesting question when you talk. So you take a look at it. I mean, how does he fit in right away? I mean, on paper, you're going, yeah, of course Noel's going to start. Really? You think he's going to come in and take Mason Plumlee's spot? Because I think Mason Plumlee is going to have something to say about that.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's a not immediately thing, but handwriting is on the wall thing, especially since Plumlee is the one guy on the whole roster who didn't get paid 10 gazillion billion dollars this offseason. You know, that would be a, yeah, may if not now, soon move. That said, now let's talk about Hassan Whiteside for a second, because we may have skipped past him just a little quickly. And I don't necessarily disagree with what you said, but okay, look, CJ McCollum averages 22 points per game, which is phenomenal. Hassan Whiteside, who is not necessarily known for his offense, is averaging 19, so the drop-off isn't that bad. The dude shoots 54% from the field on 15 shots per game. Now, that's not the 21 shots that Cousins gets, but that's a way better percentage. And, dude, maybe the best shot blocker in the league. I mean, he was 2 years ago, flat out. That is his game. And his defensive numbers are pretty darn good, to the point where you might say he's a better defender in many measures than Cousins is.
The thing about Whiteside, and you're right as far as his scoring, and his efficiency, it's not bad. The thing about Whiteside is that while he gets his shots without really needing the ball and going to work, it's because A, he doesn't have great post footwork, and B, he doesn't really have any go-to move or a jumper that's all that reliable. So the difference between Whiteside and Cousin offensively is huge. Yes, he's getting those points, but he's getting them mostly off putbacks, going to work in the post a little bit, and lobs, which is something Portland's actually started to do now. So like, I guess you could kind of point to that. But the dynamic playmaking, not just passing, but ability to create for oneself that CJ has, is up there in the top 1% of the league.
I mean, sure.
So that's something that's not necessarily quantifiable. Now, Whiteside's rebounding and shot blocking are phenomenal. Defensively in the pick and roll, and this is where when we first started discussing free agency after the playoffs last year, everybody wanted Whiteside. And I remember at our own Blazers Edge night, and we brought this up, and I couldn't go Whiteside, because defensively in the pick and roll, which is where Portland struggles the absolute most, he was horrendous. And it was, there were many, many times where me and other staff members were talking about it, and I could just queue up video after video after video after video of him just making the most boneheaded defensive plays I've ever seen. And I just,
channeling James Harden.
Oh,
yes.
Man, the face palms were just endless. And that's not the kind of, he may have the potential to be better than some other guys out there, but man, does he take plays off. And that's the last thing that you need on this roster.
The face palm defense. It's okay. Granted, I agree with that 100%. Can you just ice him back into the lane and cover that? Call it good. Dude, reinstate the Robin Lopez defense.
It would work pretty well, because the Heat run a very, very aggressive style defense, because their perimeter defenders, Justice Winslow, Chyler Johnson, I mean, they've got guys that can put a ton of pressure. Goran Dragic, who's one of the more underrated defenders in the league, they can put consistent pressure on you all game long. So basically all he had to do was sit back and play center field and clean everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does. So if you sat him back in the lane, yeah, you probably could. But when you start working him in defensively in the pick and roll game, which is what teams try to do, and pull him away from the rim, then that's where he becomes less valuable. So
yeah, and eventually you run into the same roadblock that you did with the Aldridge Blazers, which is eventually you run into someone who can beat you. You know, that when you have a style that you can't play, someone's going to exploit it. Of course, we saw that even more with last year's team. Summarizing, Dan Morang says trading for CJ is a no-brainer. Trading CJ, rather, for DeMarcus Cousins is a no-brainer. Trading him for Hassan Whiteside is a no-go. And I would say CJ for Boogie would be a no-brainer. CJ for Whiteside might still be worth considering. Now, none of this might be necessary if Festus Ezeli was healthy. We found out this week that he's most certainly not, that he might yet have to have season-ending knee surgery, and the prognosis does not look good for him donning a uniform anytime soon. Are you surprised by this at all?
Slightly. When you took a week off, I brought Taylor Danforth on the show, and I asked him how many games he saw Ezeli playing, and he shocked me when he said 20 games. I was like, woof, that's it? And now that may look like that's the over.
That's optimistic at this point. Blazers would be, yeah, yes, please.
Yeah. I expected him to play half the season. That's where I was sitting at the time. When he signed the deal, when we saw him in Portland, we knew how much cap space the Blazers had left. It was clear that, you know, we kind of started dubbing it the I failed the MRI contract. So I'm not exactly surprised. Disappointed, yeah. The whole situation has been rather strange in how the Blazers have handled, not necessarily his actual injury, but how they've discussed it or not discussed it, and then all of a sudden, this came out of nowhere. I mean, we expected setback, and then, okay, maybe it'll be a couple weeks, and then he'll be ready. And a lot of us thought December, January, he'll play. Well, December rolled around, and all of a sudden, he's might be out for the season? Like, whoa, where did that come from?
Sure. Possibility they took a flyer thinking maybe he could play, so maybe it's legit, but even if he can't play, that contract could provide some contract ballast because it's a no-fault contract. Basically, they don't have to pay him next year, neither does anybody else, right? And so they could throw that in as a midseason deal since they were over the cap anyway. They had money to spend. They were not going to get quite to the luxury tax. Let's just add another contract bargaining chip to play with. Is there a possibility that that might have been part of the scheme?
Yeah, it does make a little bit of sense.
It does.
I mean, if there's one thing that can be said for Olshay as far as GM skills, his ability to manage deals, manage the dollars as far as exchanging and making these kind of cursory moves, particularly at the end of the bench, where he, you know, you pick up guys like Tim Frazier, you swing a, what was it, a second round pick and $7 million for Robin Lopez, signing Aminu for $7.5 million. I mean, these cursory deals has really been his wheelhouse. The bigger deals, not so much, but the extraneous stuff, he's hit home runs on. To me, it seems like it's probably more than likely that that was worked into the equation when he signed that deal.
Yeah, I mean, it does make some sense in that you cannot trade a contract you don't have. And if you're $7 million short of the luxury tax, you cannot trade that $7 million short, nor do you have cap space to maneuver any trades. But if you fill that $7 million with a contract, then you do have something to trade with it. So it becomes useful money. It's a little bit speculative, cost Paul Allen $7 million, but hey, they were spending $6 billion anyway this offseason. Why not? If I'm Mason Plumlee, I look at that and I go, excuse me, you forgot somebody here and you paid this guy $7 million to not even play. You know, could I have a little? But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I'm making $4 million this year and I'm playing an awful lot.
Yeah, starting, you know, kind of helped you last year too. Anyway, yeah, I'm not surprised by this either. I think we call it, as Chris Rock said, that Tiger didn't go crazy. That Tiger went Tiger. and this contract went contract. So without Festus, look, is there any, we started on the defense kind of with Stotts. Do you see a lot of hope for this defense other than getting Aminu back? Is there something that can be done other than, let's say, getting Aminu back and other than making a trade? What could they do differently? Anything?
From an execution standpoint,
we talked about that. Effort. They got to communicate. They got to give effort. It's got to be a priority.
That's the thing is that when I look at all the video, and I've had a couple people ask me this on Twitter, you know, what's the difference between this year and last year? There's not a ton of difference as far as like what's physically happening out as far as scheme on the floor. There's not a lot of difference. It's got more guys are out of position. More guys are taking the wrong step. But, you know, somebody said, you know, what about if Aminu comes back? I mean, isn't that going to help buoy the defense? And I'm like, man, this isn't the same as last year is pulling Noah Vonleh out of the lineup and putting Maurice Harkless in. It's not that same kind of change. It's not that kind of movement. Adding Aminu will help, but even when he was healthy, I believe the D rating was like 108 or 109.
It's better than 113 or whatever it is now. But
I mean, it was still atrocious.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about world. We're not adding LeBron James to the roster here.
No.
We're adding Al-Farouq Aminu, and he's a good player, and he's a darn good defender. But people who are resting their hopes on that, are crazy.
I want to say the Blazers have played a lot of high-scoring teams, but all the teams that play the Blazers are high-scoring teams.
Yeah, I mean, I threw it out on Twitter during the Warriors game after the third quarter. The Blazers have given up 100 points through three quarters 5 times.
Yeah.
5 times. The entirety of the NBA, the other 29 teams, have done it 14 times. They're getting slaughtered.
Yeah, I said it in a Stotts post. There's no coaching scheme or defensive scheme that plans for that, that allows that. That is execution.
That's mindset. Effort.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, wrap this defense up with this. It really feels to me that the Blazers last year were the small town pool shooter who did really well in his town. He was the best. He kept beating people. And this year, and really starting in last year's playoffs, but this year, he walked to the big city and got in with the Sharks, and they're running him. And it's just, this is exactly what it feels like. The opponents know the scheme, opponents know the limitations, and opponents know that the Blazers can basically be okey-doked into 120 points per game if they try. And a lot of teams are deciding it's worth it to try because, hey, lots of fun to score, padding those stats. So look, we'll end on this. Let's end on a positive note. Christmas is coming as this comes. Christmas will be less than a week away. Your Christmas wishes for the Portland Trail Blazers circa 2016.
Guys, get healthy. I'd like to see Aminu back healthy. Lillard's had his thumb and his finger kind of bothering him a little bit. Everybody's just kind of nicked up. People getting their minds right. You can clearly see with a guy like Alan Crabb, he hasn't looked himself, and then he kind of came back around and he's kind of fallen back into that funk. Myers Leonard's another guy. It's looked great at times, and you talk about that throughout his career, but just getting healthy both physically and mentally. These guys, they need something. I don't know what it is to get their mind right. They say winning cures all ills, but you know, they're going to have to figure out a cure before they start winning. That's the big deal for me is for them to get mentally and physically right again.
That's the problem. I mean, they're never going to get healthy. And I get that with Lillard all the time. Like, okay, Dame's got this minor thing, right? And it's affecting him. Well, you're always going to have a minor thing. It's the NBA.
Yeah.
And I'm not implicating. I'm not saying anything bad about Lillard. I'm just saying that this, at some point, the NBA tests you, right? They say, okay, your thing that you want to do, we're either going to tire you out so you can't do it, or we're going to defensively take it away. So where's your plan B? And by the way, we're going to take away half of that too. So where's your plan C? And teams that have a respectable plan C end up being able to execute well because the other team tends to fold, and then you get back to plan B and plan A. It's like, we can't stop this, right? The Blazers used to. My complaint in the Aldridge era was they had a really good plan A. When you took it away, their plan B was so-so, and they didn't have a plan C at all. This was also true back with McMillan and Roy and Aldridge as well. So that's been my complaint for years. My problem right now is that they got a plan A, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
But there's no plan B with this team. It's plan A and then more plan A with different players. And it's just not going to cut it. So I guess my Christmas wish would be one that most Blazer fans are hoping for. Look, some kind of, we call it a consolidation trade. What we really mean is get some more talent in that front court. And I hope that they get a better balance. I don't know what that is. Derek Favors, Boogie Cousins, anywhere in that range would be great. Even if it's just a little more, even if it's Vooch. I mean, they need something to shake this up. They need something to get them out of their comfort zone, their satisfaction with whatever is that they thought they were doing, and, you know, to overturn the dissatisfaction with what's currently going on with some fresh hope.
That kind of makes me think of something in that maybe instead of getting their minds right, they need to get their minds kicked around a little bit. So maybe my wish is more along the lines of if they're going to do a deal, they need to get some nasty. They need to bring somebody in who's going to hold guys accountable. Maybe that'll help kickstart that.
You know what would be perfect for this team? Scottie Pippen. Go get him. I don't care if he's 80. But, you know, Scottie Pippen post-Houston trade, you know, when the Blazers actually got him.
Yeah.
The problem is the roster was too veteran and too established that he played well with them, but the locker room presence wasn't quite there.
It wasn't needed because you had
8
to 10, 12-year vets up and down the roster.
It was needed, but they didn't listen to him, right?
Yeah.
You know, and he's just like, dude, I came from a winning culture and this is not it. Look, if I could teleport that Scottie, I don't need Chicago Scottie Pippen. All right. I'm not wishing for that. I want that Scottie Pippen who came in the Houston. I want that consolidation trade like right now, or better yet, just morph him onto the roster that is, and let him be the guru and let him be the defender. And then I would like this team. Oh my gosh. But the problem is I don't see that guy out there, let alone available.
Yeah, no, guys, I mean, if you look around the NBA right now, the guys that we've talked about, and particularly the wing position, the Paul Georges, Kawhi Leonards, LeBron James, you're talking about the cream of the crop in the NBA right now. And the teams that have those guys are the teams that are the best teams in the league.
Yeah, and Paul George wouldn't do it. Kawhi Leonard could do it, but he's not coming. I'm hard pressed to think of a lot of other players. And you know, they don't just need a veteran. They need a veteran with serious chops, deep playoff experience, who can still play at a fairly high level. Doesn't necessarily have to be a superstar, but look, you bring in all the Chris Kamens in the world, but if no dude who is playing 8 minutes every third game is going to turn this around. They need a guy who can command respect from the get-go, who can like stand beside Damian Lillard, kind of be the enforcer, and Lillard's still the leader, Lillard's still the kind of public face, and, you know, the acknowledged scoring leader. But this other guy is like, hey, Dame, let me whip these guys into shape for you, and then does it.
Yeah, you need 32-year-old Vince Carter.
Yeah, well, I mean, Vince Carter, there was a time I wanted Vince Carter. Like a couple years ago, I thought he would have been a great addition to this team. But no, it's Pippen. Just give me the time machine. Of course, people are going to complain. Now, I didn't ask for Sabonis. I should ask for him, too, if we're going to do that. Which, by the way, yeah, I'd take him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, put Arvidas on this team and we're going to have fun now. But anyway,
you'd solve some defensive and some offensive deficiencies if you went that
way. Yeah, yeah. Pippen, Sabonis, I don't ask for much. Hey, Santa. In any case, any last thoughts, Dan?
No, I'm just sitting here looking at the schedule and thinking, God, they don't really get much better here for a little while. So if they're going to get right, they're going to have to get right on a tough trail. So
problem is when you're losing to Denver, I mean, I know it's on the road. I know it's
losing
back
to Denver,
but
handily.
Yeah, badly. Yeah. That's what looks easier. I mean, I hope they win against Sacramento.
Here's the thing about that game. If you want to look at that game in particular, one, it means a ton. Two, look at the games the Kings and the Blazers have played over the last 3 years. Almost every one of those games has been a very good game.
I love that matchup.
It's for whatever reason, somebody on the Kings, and it's Cousins is going to get his. I mean, he's been bothered a few times by Myers, and I'd hope to God that Leonard actually gets a start if Al's.
Oh, go Myers, go! I love that.
It's one of my favorite matchups in the league. But somebody like Darren Collison or Rudy Gay comes out and just torches the Blazers and makes it not just a competitive game, but a game that usually goes down to the wire. So. Yeah. If Portland's looking or hoping that, hey, Sacramento's in disarray, let's go ahead and make this a get-right game. It hasn't been a get-right game in the past. So.
No, I love Minnesota on the road, too. I like that. And Minnesota in Portland is not as exciting, but
yeah.
I love those road games against the Wolves. Those are pretty cool. Any matchup against the Utah Jazz is usually pretty good if they're healthy, which they're not ever, but still, that's a good matchup. But, you know, it makes me think, and I promise we'll let you go in a minute, guys, but here's the thing. Looking back at the get right game, that was the Thunder, right? The Blazers came home and they won that thing, and they won that thing playing really well and really handily. And we thought, here's the turnaround. And then they go out and they lay an egg.
And they played the worst they may have played all season in back-to-back
games. Yeah, again, mile high. And, you know, there are lots of reasons, but still, it was bad. And here's what I think looking back now. That was a get right game. But the Blazers fell into the same trap of saying, okay, we've achieved something. We got right. At some point, they need someone on that roster, and maybe this is my Christmas wish, or the same as yours when you started the show, to say, look, we didn't do anything. We won a game against OKC, who's not playing that well at home, which we should have won. And by the way, we should have won more on the road. And by the way, one win does not make up for a 1-4 road trip. So, yes, that was good. Now do it again. And do it again. and don't talk about having done anything or getting better until we are looking at the correct side of the playoff bracket and are facing a first round opponent that we think we can beat.
I can go behind that.
Yeah. Well, problem is I'm not sure they have that guy. So we will see. That is my Christmas wish for Dan Morang. We hope you all have a Merry Christmas. We thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again soon.